This is Gen Clash, Queer Perspectives on Current Affairs, a Gay 45 European original podcast endorsed by the Vienna Business Agency, the organisation that provides support for founders and companies that grow or settle in Vienna.
Hello from London and Vienna, and welcome to Gen Clash, Queer Perspectives on Current Affairs. I am Maruna Tipperiu, and I'm here with Razvanion.
Hello, hello.
This week, we have on the table Russian crackdown on LGBT plus bars mirrors brutal persecution in Africa. In the European Union, 70% of the population support gay marriage and trans rights. The legendary building Tuntenhaus in Berlin faces uncertain future. Queer Quarter, a special space at Fanzenized Art Fair in Vienna. Subway surfing incorporates queer sexual behaviour in New York. In Russia, LGBT plus films and books are prohibited. And openly discussing one's orientation and identity is forbidden. The declaration of being LGBT plus in Russia is deemed extremist, effectively placing all queer individuals outside the law. Even a tweet with a rainbow can be grounds for a fine or imprisonment. Riot police, accompanied by TV cameras, were dispatched to gay bars, resulting in the arrest and subsequent fining of individuals. Another person was convicted by court to 5 days of detention for wearing rainbow-coloured earrings, and two individuals were fined for posting a rainbow flag on their respective social media pages.
Unfortunately, you are right. This situation in Russia is becoming unbearable for the LGBT community. It's becoming more and more repressive. But I hope Vladimir Putin, after he secured his mandate as president of Russian Federation in the elections last week, will lose a little bit of the grip on the LGBT community. Even I'm not sure about that because, you know, he has a war where he's not winning. Maybe he's not losing, but he's not winning for sure. And also we have a problem with LGBT soldiers in both armies. We received complaints from Russian, but also from Ukrainian soldiers who are discriminated in both countries.
Yeah, I mean, we had the pleasure of publishing a short story by the queer Ukrainian writer, Ilya Kharkov, a few months ago. And it dealt exactly with this experience of gay men in war-torn Ukraine and about the fears of being conscripted and about facing this kind of homophobic microcosm that the military environment still brings out. His stories are very much centered on how socio-political themes seep through this idea of daily life. And he presents an angle that I haven't really seen in any discourse or in much discourse about the war in Ukraine. And I think it introduces the important nuance that you can recognize the suffering of Ukrainians at the hands of Russia and be pro-Ukraine while simultaneously recognizing that homophobia persists and that this double experience of queer people, of queer Ukrainians who are suffering from these two sources is very valid and should be discussed openly.
Ukraine was never an open-minded country. It's a very conservative Orthodox country. So I was there and I can tell you I never saw an open-minded society to queer problems. So I will not expect Ukrainians to be now much open to this context. Maybe because, you know, LGBT soldiers cannot be, you know, discriminated basically because they are fighting in the front line. But otherwise, we have a very strong conservative society, which we find in different areas in East Europe. Poland now it's better because of the change of the government, but we still have Hungary, where it's dramatic. We have Romania and Bulgaria, another two Orthodox countries. But we will see how this will develop in East Europe. I mean, probably you know better than me because you are focused more on East European area.
It's been interesting to see this sort of domino effect in the region, especially in a post-socialist context. I mean, the Russian anti-LGBT propaganda law that we just discussed has almost successfully been implemented in other Eastern European states, especially EU member states like Hungary, Poland, and Romania. I mean, I was in Budapest just last September shooting a film, and well, which was coincidentally a queer film, and we went to a bookshop to look at the renowned, I guess, or infamous plastic-wrapped queer books as a very physical sign of this homophobic censorship and this treatment of queer experience as quote-unquote propaganda to keep especially children away from. So yeah, I think it's this problem is kind of a wider scope in the region. But I agree with you in that I'm hoping that things will change for the better, especially after seeing the new Polish parliament following the election. And yeah, I hope Romania will and Hungary will follow suit.
And Bulgaria, because we always forget about talking about Bulgaria. And we have also Serbia, of course, where the situation is very bad. And this type of attitude and this type of anti-LGBT registration, like in Russia, we can see mirroring in African countries, where I'm looking closely how the politics is developing there. And I see Ghana and Uganda, where the legislation is really draconic. Uganda even last year introduced for aggravating homosexuality, whatever is that, death penalty. So we are in a very radical moment in some regions, and we have to keep our focus and we have to keep fighting.
Last year, the EU Barometer's release signaled a shift in public perception of diversity. Around two-thirds of respondents now advocate for LGBT plus rights within the bloc. Over 70% champion the validity of same-sex unions and advocate for marriage equality across Europe. This evolving sentiment underscores a growing acceptance of diversity within the EU.
Recently, I saw in Europe, because we are in a very different position if we compare to Americans, I saw even personally a different type of attitude of people in the street. But this Eurobarometer from the last year shows us something extraordinary. 70% of the population, they have no problem with gay marriage, not just supporting, but they think it's part of the normal behavior, which is without precedent until now. On the other hand, we have a different type of vision on Roma people, disability people, neurodiverse people. So we can say for sure Europe, amid dramatic changes with left and right fight right now, it's going to a very consistent path, and human rights are respected in most of the countries with absolutely no problem. Of course, we still have a problem in Hungary, Romania, and Bulgaria, but let's hope, and Slovakia, which everybody forgets about it. But now we are in a positive position in a way, and we can see in elections dramatic change. We have prime ministers and head of a state gay open, like the prime minister of Luxembourg, Tisha, the prime minister of Ireland, Leo Varadkar. We have Ana Brnabic, a lesbian prime minister in Serbia, and recently the president of Lithuania and the prime minister in France, with his former boyfriend as foreign affairs minister. For sure, that's not a guarantee everything will be better. We have a very clear example of Anna Brnabić, which we believed as lesbian will support LGBT community, but on the other hand, she basically suspended Europride in Belgrade 2 years ago or a year ago. I know you have a different opinion than me of the French prime minister, but I still think it was a good option.
I respect your decision, but also, I mean, look, Gabriel Attal is a cutie, but I don't think he's much more than that. Politically, I am...
He is a cutie.
He is, but in the same way that Macron was during his first presidential campaign.
Yeah,
and everyone
right.
went crazy over him, myself included, as a bisexual. And look at him now, you know, he's kind of hated. The people voted for him tactically second time round and so on and so forth. I don't think Attal should be heralded as this like queer representative within the French government, because I really don't think that he has the idea like that he supports the queer community and that he wants to vouch for his own community at the forefront of his politics. And it seems to me that the queer community perhaps got over it excited about the idea of having such a representative, rather than focusing on his politics, his past in politics as well. And I don't think your sexuality makes you a good person automatically. I mean, with respect to what you said about Brnabić as well.
I know you are right. On the political side, I think Attal was a good option, not only because he is queer. You are right. We tend in our community to give us granted the kindness of queer people, which it's far from being true. We are human beings and everybody is good, bad, or I don't know, in the middle. But for sure, being queer doesn't mean you will be a good politician or you will be a good person. But again, I think we have some hope for other regions in the world, with Europe going so straight-headed to respect human rights, LGBT rights, women rights, and making trans-positive legislations on the continent.
Legendary queer squat-turned-community-based project, Tuddenhaus, is threatened with the end. Tuddenhaus saw the coming together of anarcho-communist dreams and pragmatic community building from a group of queer people from East and West Berlin alike. The house, established originally in Berlin's Mainzer Straße in the 1990s, has already had to battle for its existence. It was raided by police in 1991, looted and shut down. Now located in Kastanienallee, the building's owner has announced that he will sell it, displacing its queer community of inhabitants once more.
Ah, this is a very dear memory. Tuddenhaus. That's a dear memory. It's one of the most meaningful places for queer community and for left community. In the front of the building was a lot of organizations, actually initiatives, not legally registered. Also, there are some bars downstairs where people can stay and everybody can enter there and talk. There are some exhibitions and also, if I remember, 20-something apartments. During the time, they refurbished the building a little bit, but accordingly to the law in Vienna as well, when you have a building which present a risk for the tenants, has to be teared down, not refurbished. But at the moment, I think they should find solutions. I see they talk to the representatives of the city hall, and seems like they will find at the end a solution, but it will be a pity. It's unique in Europe. It was one similar in Paris, which disappeared in the meanwhile. Now it's a luxury building, and this one, I hope it will stay.
Yeah, what struck me, I mean, I really recommend, there's a documentary that was made at the time called The Battle of Tuddenhaus in two parts. So following them before the raid in 91, and afterwards. And it's a wonderful piece of archival material. And I get the impression that it kind of created this phenomenon out of this original Tuntunhaus. And as you said very rightly, it spurred on a movement almost. And people think back to it with nostalgia.
It is quite a movement, yes.
I mean, even myself, who was not even alive in the 90s, I feel so attached to it ever since discovering it and researching it a bit more. And so, yeah, I really hope that people will petition and will genuinely fight against.
I truly believe that's exactly kind of representation of what we do here in the podcast. You will see 20 years old and 50 years old living in the same place and talking in the same, because they have common values. They talk art, they talk politics, they have common goals, they have common feelings. So it's a very interesting place. It's not a solution just for making 25 apartments, luxury apartments. Of course, it's a very beautiful in the middle of Berlin, but I think maybe it can be kept as it is. Not even the little transformation of making a center or anything, it will destroy the spirit of Tuntunhaus. Tuntunhaus is not as it was, but still it is somehow. So, and also it's very interesting, you said about the documentary, but it was a very good exhibition last year in Zwules, the gay museum in Berlin, about that period of time. And it was a beautiful time. And I think the Gen Z today, I know, they will really like to have this kind of places.
For the first time in Vienna, Queer Quarter will be held at the Fanzineist Book Art Fair from the 10th to the 12th of May. Gay 45 will collaborate on an area defined for LGBT plus visitors and make it effortless to find queer books, art, and zines. It is an inclusive gathering within the Fanzineist Vienna Art Book and Zine Fair.
Yes, it will be an interesting event. Queer Quarter will be an important intervention by a magazine inside of a general event. And I think this is the way we should do it. We should open to the different public and to show queer art and queer discourse, so people will start to understand us better. As far as I understand, you know better, you are the editor-in-chief. Also, Gay 45 will have a special printed edition, a collectible printed edition launched at the event. And as far as I know, Gay 45 will be in also in We Are Developers, a tech conference in Berlin. That shows more and more the interests of the general public in queer discourse and our opinion and how we see the world we are living in right now.
A gay couple posted on social media images depicting two men engaging in intimate acts atop a moving subway train. Train surfing, also known as tram surfing or subway surfing, is the act of riding on the exterior parts of a moving train. Train surfers ride outside of the structure, either on the side, behind, or on the roof of the railroad car. In New York, subway surfing has been around since at least the 1980s, but a new generation of teens is drawn in by the rush of seeing their reactions on TikTok and Instagram.
It's a very disturbing, I don't know how to call it. It's not a sport. So please don't do it. Don't try it. Subway surfing is a very crazy thing, which is going on for many years. I saw that in Buenos Aires. In Buenos Aires, it's a kind of a fashion tradition. I don't know what to say. But going on the train to do surf, it's crazy. But beyond that, to have sex doing that and having someone to film you, it's going a little bit too far.
Yeah, there's a lot of layers to it, I guess. Why do you think people do it?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's a necessity of adrenaline. But I still, for me, it's a question of not why they do it, but how they do it. How you have sex on a train at 120 kilometers an hour in the surfing position? That's a question which will haunt me. In the end, Mirna, I will like to ask you a question, because you are a critic review for Gay 45, and also you study film in Cambridge University. What should I choose to see in a cinema or for a date night this week?
Well, what a great question, Raz. I think for the cinema date, I'm going to recommend the last film I saw in the cinema myself, and that has been screening for so many weeks in the UK. And of course, I'm referring to Poor Things, which also recently swept up the Oscars. I mean, it won an incredible amount of awards. Emma Stone for Best Lead Actress, loads of VFX and design awards. And I really think it's well deserved. I think this is Yorgos Lanthimos' most playful and like wide-reaching film. It's like, I don't know, I can only compare it to Barbie and how big of an audience that it's garnered. And I think it's also a great film for a date night, because it's really funny. Like, I went to see it with a friend and we were cackling in the cinema. And I think that's also a really good icebreaker on a first date. And as for the date night, I'm going to recommend Rye Lane by Rainn Alan Miller, which is available on Disney Plus, because I think it's the best rom-com I've seen in years. It's also quite playful. It merges elements of magical realism, musicals. It's so beautiful. It's set in a gorgeous part of London, the titular Rye Lane. And it tells a really beautiful story. And it's just, yeah, very wholesome. So Rye Lane is available on Disney Plus, and I really, really recommend that you watch it.
Beautiful. Now we have what to do this week. Until next time.
This was Gen Clash from London and Vienna with Maruna Tiberio and Rizvani On, a production of Gay 45, a smart indie queer magazine. As usual, Gen Clash is fed by the amazing news editor Taylor Abbott and produced by the creative audio engineer Emil Dragomirescu, with the fabulous original music created by GS Bumps. For an insight into where we select the topics discussed, subscribe to our The Nine newsletter. Link in the description of the episode. If you want to listen to the podcast as soon as it's published, click on the follow button. For our podcast listeners, we have a special gift, a gift of knowledge. For a limited time, the subscriptions on gay45.com are 80% less. Do not miss it. Go to gay45.com for more details and to read our wealth of articles. Send your suggestions to gay45.com/podcast. We are eager to hear your ideas and proposals. That's all for now. Spread the word about us. Until next time.